Hi, I'm Lance. I'm an addict. And I'm glad I can't see a soul out there. Wow. I got to tell you right up front, I better say this first. Thanks, John. There's still a part of me that doesn't think I deserve to be talked about like that. I'm like, I did all that. Wow, I don't think I did all that. But thank you. And thanks the committee, for asking me. This is the most uncomfortable thing I do in recovery because I hate it. I hate sharing about myself. I hate talking about my feelings. I've always hated that. And the biggest part of me that I when I get up in the morning, the demons I face is those kind of things. You know, some of my character defects are just ingrained in granite. And tell me that, you know what, why the hell did they pick me to be the Friday night opening speaker? But actually, this is an honor, because like my first sponsor told me, Bobby C. in Pittsburgh there, if I chase this like I chase the dope, I got half a chance. And that's probably what John saw more than anything, as I continue to chase my recovery like I got high. I chase life today like I got high. And I guess what that has boiled down to is my defects have slowly turned into my assets. Because, hey, isn't that what happened the other way around? My assets turned into my defects. I don't know what I'm going to say here. I probably went through a couple leads in my head. Yeah, right, like 3,000 of them. And that's what I've always been. That's how this, you know, someone, everything I'm going to say here tonight is not me. I got to tell you that right off the bat. All right. And I'd like to take it one step further to say that, you know, somebody told me this when I came around here, because I didn't know anything. I didn't know I didn't know. I came here with a lot of stuff, and I heard somebody say it at the 3 o'clock workshop. I came here with all kinds of stuff that I accumulated that wasn't really me, you know, that I like took something from you and you and you and you and you and acquired it in my mannerisms and behavior because I thought I had to do that, and smothered who I really was way back in the corner, you know. Because if you knew who I was, you probably wouldn't like me. I wouldn't be accepted. And all that other stuff that this disease does to us. It does to me. So if I don't get any, you know, if you don't get anything out of this, don't blame me. You know how the deal works, right? If you want what we have to offer and are willing to get it, you know. Just for a point of reference, my clean date's October 28th, 1988. And I say that because if anybody's here, new or whatever, I'm giving you some hope. And there's another side of that for me, too, is if you got up before 6 o'clock this morning, my philosophy is you got more clean time than I do because it's right about for today, and that's it. You know, this is all that's real right here, right now. Everything else is, you know, a memory or just an illusion in my mind for tomorrow. I've seen some stuff being around a little bit. And probably, if anything I have to share tonight, it's probably on what not to do, you know, what not to do. And I think that's how we've always been, I think. All of our experience, strength, and hope is from what we've done wrong somewhere along the way. And we've learned how to do it right. And that's what was always conveyed to me. I was born and raised in Pittsburgh. I want to say Pittsburgh and member, and I have all this Pittsburgh accent, but I'm trying to get away to speaking clearly anymore because people call me on it at work. I have this heavy Pittsburgh accent, but, you know, that's that's my own personal growth. But what really happened is, you know, the title River of Hope, you know, the only thing I hoped for was to get my wife off my back. The only thing I hoped for was to get work off my back. And the only thing I ever hoped for was on Christmas Eve, the dope man would still let me come to his house and cop, you know. And I didn't end up here because of my own desperation, I should say that. I ended up here because everybody else thought I had a problem and was making it very difficult for me to function. So I came here to get everybody off my back. That was the only thing I was hoping for. And a funny thing happened, you know, and it's still important to me today is H&I. There was these guys that came into the rehab. And although I didn't get clean after I left there, I used again. There was something about what they talked about when I came and shared. And I think it was more, not that I understood what they were talking about, it was more about I felt what they were talking about, you know. And that's always been the connection here for me, with anything, really. You know, it was that that silent language in between the lines that spurs all these magical thoughts in my head. I didn't think anybody else felt that way. I didn't think anybody else had those fears or those doubts. Didn't have those angers. Didn't have those hidden resentments and those voices talking at night over and over again. You know, they said, I'm going to say, why did they say that, son of a gun? You know, and all that other crazy stuff, that, you know, the committee that goes on in my head. And I'm just really grateful to Narcotics Anonymous. There's a whole lot of ways to get clean. I believe that. But for me, it was other addicts, long-haired leaping gnomes, as I call them, when I came around, that sounded like me, looked like me, and talked about the stuff going on inside. Because, you know, I don't think I would have listened to anybody else. Because at that time, and this is just a reference to that time for me, at that time, anybody over a certain age was Archie Bunker to me, you know. It was Free the People Now, you know. And, you know, hell with the establishment and the complex military blues and all that stuff. I'm a product of the late 60s. Drugs was going to be my spiritual awakening and bring me a greater conscious contact. Yeah. All that other stuff I sold myself. What it ended up being was everything, you know. And it's funny, everything I was looking for, everything I set out to do with those ideals, my assets, this disease turned against me, you know. In the end, I was 135 pounds, jaundice, and peeking and geeking out curtains, you know, hearing voices outside the door. Paid good money to act that way, you know. Yeah. Oh, man. And most of all, I was a shell. I had tombstones in my eyes. There was, you know, I was a slave. I was a slave to an ideal or a substance or this gnawing, this hole I couldn't feel inside of me anymore, you know. And all my dreams and aspirations were gone. You know? I don't ever remember saying, I'm going to grow up and be an addict someday, you know. But I had these things as I was growing up, you know. And I brought them here. You know, I remember my first time having to do this, you know. What do you mean I got to read readings? When I went to my first detox, they ushered me out of the detox and into an AA meeting in a hospital gown with my butt still hanging out, you know, where you can never tie that last string. And you know, so that was my introduction to, and I don't know about you guys, but I hate authority, so I thought they were deliberately trying to humiliate me. And, of course, I copped the resentment and, you know, never returned. Went out and did more spiritual damage to myself. But so it was a journey getting here. it was a real journey getting here. I'm just, you know, those guys that came in, I can still see their faces. I don't know their names, but they sparked something in me. So a funny thing happens, you know. I've been talking to some folks since I got here, some great folks, actually, and I keep hearing this reoccurring theme of things that happen, and even though we think we are involved in it or have some decision-making or whatever, there's a greater force moving all of us towards something greater, you know, and I ended up getting out of my last rehab, and I knew I wasn't going to stay clean in the Alleghenies, because there wasn't any of these guys from Narcotics Anonymous around too much, and I went to work, I should back up. What happened was I went to see my parents on Thanksgiving in Pittsburgh, and I felt like using. I felt like going over to the local bar where I used to hang and see everybody and show them how great I was doing, you know. And I did do that. I went over to Pleasant Hills Catering right there on Route 51, Bill Green Shopping Center. And I opened up the door and I looked in, and everybody that I used to hang with was what seemed to me at the time was still sitting in the same exact bar stool with the same jeans and flannel on, like they never moved. And that really hit me. It was like, you know, nothing's changed here, man. And probably the only thing that saved me is that I thought I was kind of hip and slick and progressive, and I didn't want to be with the passe folks. I had to be on the cutting edge of stuff. So I think that feeling of that really turned me around. I went back home, and I remember an addict at my last rehab, Tom M., saying that his story about finding his best friend in his apartment, you know, dead for 4 days in the chair. And he graphically explained how his fingers sunk into his flesh when he poked him to see if he was awake. Talked about calling this number in the Pittsburgh phone directory. Actually, he was looking to call his dope man, which was alphabetically a couple spaces before the word narcotics, narcissus or something like that. He saw the NA helpline and called a helpline number. And so I did that. And they told me there was a meeting right down the road. Matter of fact, right where I used to hitchhike when I used to come out of the Whitehall Theater on Route 51 and Brownsville Road. It was kind of ironic. Go figure, right? Same church we used to hide three guys in the bushes, and when the one guy got a ride, we all jumped in the car. And there was an NA meeting there. And I walked in, and these guys hugged me, which I wasn't all right with. And I remember being at some meetings in Johnstown. And I was told to shut up and that I didn't know nothing. And these guys said, you know, you want to share. Now, this is the way it works with me, right? This is a newcomer to me. Don't tell me to shut up, because I'll cop a resentment and leave. But when you asked me to share, I was scared to death. You know what I mean? That's me anyway. I don't know if you can relate to that, but what impressed me is I felt equal. I felt like I was at home for some reason. And I went back home and I told my wife. I said, Deb, if we don't get to Pittsburgh, I don't think I'm going to recover up here in the mountains. You know, and I went to work the next morning after the four-day vacation there. And I'm getting a drink of water when I walk in. I look up, and right in front of me was a position with the folks I worked with in another branch of their operation in Pittsburgh doing exactly what I did there. And what a coincidence. Huh? And that's kind of the way it's been. I don't think twice when these red flags jump up in front of me and are going like, you know, over here anymore. I don't question those in every area of my life. this whole process has brought me an awareness of directions, signs, if you want to call it that, magic opportunities that I would have missed in the haze of denial and illusion that I was living. I was not living a reality, I was living a subculture life. And I didn't know I was selling myself my own bill of goods, with my own voice in my own head. And so we moved to Pittsburgh, and I started doing these meetings. And I heard some folks talk about starting meetings and that, and there was like four or five of us, and the group was called Work the Steps or Die, Motherfucker. And I'm serious. And at that time, there was one area in Pittsburgh called PASNA, Pittsburgh Area Service Committee. And they were just getting this letter around to form the South Hills area. And the guy in the group was talking. I didn't know nothing about that stuff. And the priest come down, and they had these meeting lists for our little local area. And that's why they were talking about forming it, because, nobody's paying attention to us, blah, blah, blah. It's too far to drive 8 miles to downtown. The priest come down, and he's saying, oh, a meeting list. And he goes, Zion Lutheran Church, Work the Steps or Die, Motherfucker. And he said, oh, boys, no. We cannot have the church's name and this on the same page. And that's, you have those spiritual awakenings. Oh, yeah, geez, that's embarrassing. So it got changed to Better Change or Die, Mother. It got changed to Better Change. And they're still there today. They're still there today. I remember being just two of us at one point. About this time I got a sponsor. And, he said, hey, you want to make a commitment? Make a coffee commitment or whatever. You got to have a year clean to be a secretary or chair. That's the way it was in Pittsburgh. You had this year, magic mark year. All of a sudden you became... And he used to say, no, because I used to say, what do you think I am, some kind of moron? I'm like 36 years old. I understand how to do stuff. Why can't I be the chair of a meeting with 60 days clean and stuff like that? But he said, well, that's because you got to get the basics down. You got to be working on yourself, and don't worry about the home group. Make some coffee, set up some chairs, And here's what happened with that. Here's what happened. The real deal there, because. I would like to take some credit that I opened the door and kept the meeting open, or something like that, or that I made the best coffee in the world, and nobody else could, so I had to be there, or you'd mess it all up. After all, not that I had control issues or anything, but the real deal was I was showing up, and I was showing up early with some other folks, and a funny thing had to happen. I had to talk to somebody, right? All of our steps start with the word we. And I was, that was drilled into my head. This is a we program. Of myself, alone, I'm in the worst company in the world. And that is still true today. Because the committee can run rampant sometimes, even with whatever I have, 18, 19, somewhere in there. And I have a healthy respect for that. Because that's where this disease lives. It lives between, like my sponsor said, it's that funny-looking thing between your two ears, Lance. It isn't the stuff on the table. Oh. You mean me? Okay. I always want to put it, blame it on the stuff at first, Well, it was too much cocaine, or it was a little bit too much Yukon Jack, or, if I just stick to some marijuana, after all, God gave us marijuana, right? I would be okay, but you know what? There was never enough. It was about something going on inside of me. It was about this disease, and that's a frightening thing too, because at 35, 36 years of age, I didn't understand the first step. I complicated the hell out of it. What are you talking about? The disease? What is the disease of addiction? okay, I understand, you know, I couldn't stop using on my own with my own will. But what are you talking about, this disease? What's this? And so my sponsor handed this IP called the Triangle of Self-Obsession, you know. And I think I started getting a handle on the core of our disease, fears, angers, resentments. And that opened a whole new realm of thinking for me, you know. Because I used to think it was the stuff on the table. You know, bullets don't kill people, right? They're just bullets. If it was the substance that was the problem, then everybody that used the substance would have been like I was. They weren't. They aren't. So it's an inside job. It's an inside job. And the only way I've been able to do that inside job is through having a sponsor, a home group, and the 12 steps and traditions of Narcotics Anonymous. Because they've woken me back up to realize what I've incorporated in my personality that really wasn't me, my character defects, my shortcomings, you know, and they're slowly, you know, even today. Because I'd like to say I'm this really spiritual guy, and John said something about being at peace with himself. I got some stuff going on in my life that I know I'm completely powerless over. And, you know, it's kind of like when somebody close to you dies or a loved one in your family passes away and you just have that complete feeling of there's not a doggone thing you can do to change that reality. And some things are going on in my life with my daughter and that, and we're raising my grandson, which is a blessing, actually, you know, in disguise, so to speak. But there are days where I want to kill somebody, you know. And I don't know if anybody else does that, but you go through the motions. Oh, well, they'll never find an arrow. They'll never be able to trace an arrow. How about a propane tank to the engine or something? A manifold, that might work. No. And I go there. I go there. Thank God. And this is how it works for me today, because I remember with a year clean, somebody come up and asked me to be their sponsor. Boy, was that guy. What was he thinking? And I ran over to my sponsor, you know, kind of like the cartoon where, you know, what do we do now, Spike? What do we do now, Spike? And I got to tell you, Steve was 6 years younger than me. He still is, actually, but he's not my sponsor anymore. He's moved to California. I still love him, and we keep in contact. And Steve turned to me, and I said, is it okay to sponsor this guy? Because I grew up on that in recovery, that you check everything out with your sponsor, because. Not that I can be self-willed or anything or grandiose, but that's exactly why. Because an addict alone, once again, you know how we are. Me. And Steve turned to me and he said, "Well, you'll never know when he'll save your ass." And so that's what I've come to understand. I would like to think that maybe tonight I'll make somebody stay clean. But the real deal is, I wouldn't be working the first step in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm powerless over the disease of addiction. The only magic that's happened here is I was asked to speak, and it's kept me clean. I take meetings into hospitals and institutions, prisons more today than anything, and those guys keep me clean. I'm very aware of the prices that have been paid by their addicts to keep me clean. I stood next to their coffins. But together, you know, together, we can stay clean. And that's the hope. That's the hope I have here, is when I'm plotting to murder somebody or having some silly thing at work or within my family rent space in my head, and the committee starts talking, it's you guys that deliver the message or bring up a topic or share some pain, and I open up my mouth and share some stuff with me about relating, and I hear myself say some stuff too. I hear the stuff I need to hear myself. So that's true. The guys I sponsor save my ass. It never fails that they call me up with something going on that I've been wrestling with, and maybe not the same exact way, but in a similar principles, you know, the similar answers to the dilemma. And that's great stuff. That's great stuff. You can't buy that stuff. You can't buy that stuff. I've been looking for this jolt my whole life. And my God's got a funny sense of humor. You folks brought it to me. You know. Other addicts, you know. Folks that I said I'll never be like them. And in the end, they were saying they didn't want me around, you know. I remember saying that. I'll never end up like Rat or Ron McGachran. All those guys that hung on the corner. And in the end, they didn't want me showing up because they knew I was going to steal their dope and help them look for it, you know. In a nutshell. Forget about friendships and all that. In the end, it was about, you know, whatever we could get. You know, remember, when it all began, we kind of like used to share our stuff with one another, you know. Yeah, what was it like before you got here? Yeah, there was no sharing going on. You all go somewhere, and when you get to the bar, you turn to your partner and say, "Where the hell's Randy? You don't think he's back at our house, do you?" Yeah. That's the kind of life, that's what this disease brought all my friendships and my relationships to. I couldn't trust anybody. It was hard to trust somebody when I got here. It was hard to call my sponsor the first time. You know, 36, 37 years of age, afraid to call another person on the telephone. What am I going to say to this guy? You know, that's that isolation. That's that voice saying, you know, keep by yourself. Don't let any of that good stuff in, man. What you're thinking is okay. And I got to tell you, though, you know, when I called him, the magic happens, you know. He knew I was uncomfortable. So we started talking about, the steps. Go figure. I came up in the Alleghenies because of I had an opportunity through recovery at about 5-6 years clean to get a better job. Back at the place that saw me leave 135 pounds in jaundice when I went to my first, you know, move back to Pittsburgh to find recovery. And now they were hiring me back or accepting my transfer back. They didn't have to as a foreman. And some magic things happen here when I work on myself and I face my fears. And I was watching my sponsor in the end at that time drove his riding lawnmower across Pittsburgh about 15 miles actually to cop because nobody would give him a set of keys to be in the vehicle. And he had 240s in each pocket when he rolls up to the dope man's house on his riding Sears tractor, which was, you know, you got a picture there, right? That's desperation, man. Today, he has a doctorate from the University of Pittsburgh. He's no longer my sponsor, but I watched this guy do that, and he used to share about his fears and his doubts. You know, I said, damn, that's exactly what goes through my head, you know. There's somewhere in our basic text talks about being able to look another human being in the eye and be grateful. You know, I remember living that stuff where I couldn't look what I called the suits or the man, you know, which was just another human being like me that worked for something. And I couldn't look them in the eye because I had some kind of resentment or thing going on that was completely contrived in my head about unfairness or whatever, when actually I was a product of my own doing, my own responsibilities, you know. I created my own situations, You know, I had choices, but this disease strips me of the ability to be blind. And even though, like I said in the beginning, I didn't know, I didn't know. I didn't know the choices I was making was way out there, you know, just way out there. And so watching these guys before me do this stuff, I'm just really grateful, man, because I didn't know it was about that little voice, you know, talking to me. Worthless, worthless. Never, they'll never. That'll never happen, you know. And that goes way back. That goes way back to in a classroom where if I missed the first word reading, I thought everybody in the room was laughing at me. I didn't look around to see if that was true. I just shut down, you know, and that grew. All that stuff grew, you know. There was a lot of work to do. There was a lot, and I'm still that way. I don't know why I'm even standing up here. But I know who you guys are. You know, I feel comfortable, like always. I'm feeling a lot better. It's great to be here, actually. It's a miracle to be here. So I go to, you know, I do this. Oh, gonna make an amends. Debbie's always wanted to be on a lake. I got a foreman's job. We're gonna build this house. All this stuff, right? And it was about amends, but there was all this other stuff creeping in at the time because, and I was sharing this earlier. There was Altoona, Johnstown, and Somerset, and they're probably, if you connect the dots between the three driving, it'd be about 70 some miles. And of course, with 6 years clean, I was getting meetings early, so I was, you know, okay, I'll chomping at the bit to meet, you know, I'll go to this Altoona meeting. Wasn't there. Well, I can make Johnstown half hour before it even starts. Wasn't there. Well, I'll be a little late for the Somerset one, but it'll still be a meeting. Wasn't there. The regional meeting list had these meetings, but and they had basically, for all intents and purposes, almost dried up in the mountains. Later, I was to find out that's because they weren't following their traditions and stuff like that. But I found myself driving 45 miles once a week. Now, this is from going to 5 to 7 meetings a week, having a home group, being involved in the area, being the H&I chair, having an H&I commitment, serving as public information, all this, you know, all over a six-year period of doing this stuff because my sponsor was a service junkie, so I was a service junkie. You know. But it was the same premise, like I said earlier. It wasn't about saving somebody. I was doing this because it was keeping me clean, you know. And I didn't want to go back. You know, once I got a taste of this, I didn't want to go back. So I actually pulled off to the side of Route 219, coming back from Somerset, and I was just seeing everybody's face that I had gotten clean with over a six-year period in Pittsburgh, you know. And because of being involved in some service and the regional level and so forth, I had all these folks that were part of my life, and I missed them, and I started crying. I started crying on the side of Route 22 that I just realized that I no longer had that. And so I went to Greensburg, 45 miles away, made it my home group. Every Wednesday I would go, and I'm back doing this thing for the family. Then every other Wednesday, then maybe once a month. And I was nuts. I got to tell you, by about 6 months, with one meeting periodically, I was a madman. I was angry all the time. I was just plain miserable. I was miserable. You know, long-distance sponsor on the phone at that time. And sure enough, Steve calls, and he says, hey, all these groups just registered, came down and registered down at the region office. Before we put them on the meeting list, why don't you just go make sure that they're open? I think he knew what was going on with me because once in a while I touched base with him and I, you know, I had all these issues, crying to him on the phone. And the rest happens. You know, the rest happens. There was some folks showed up from Connecticut, from Philly, from all over. About 8 of us. About 8 of us. Go figure. Found each other. found each other. Ain't that the way it always goes? I would have found you if I was using, I guarantee you that. If I wasn't a cop, I would have found him. And we started some home groups, you know. And then we got grandiose. And we wanted to do a helpline. Somebody talked about a helpline. And a couple of us had some experience from more mature NA communities. And we did this picnic, the Unity Picnic. And, of course, the vice chair of the area stole all the money. You know how we are, right? God bless her. I hope she's clean today. And, you know, we would sit in the car, and she'd go up to the bank, and all of us would be there because we knew we had to do this together because we don't trust one another. And, you know, hey, what's the basket for? And let me see that treasury report. And I don't know how the hell she took the money, but she did. And helped us look for it, too. But needless to say, you know what? That unified us, all right? So I know the price she paid for us to be unified. You know, like I said in the beginning, it's what doesn't kill us makes us stronger, I guess. And what we do wrong is how we learn. I don't know about anybody else here, but that's what it's always been like. And we got tighter and more resolved on our purpose. And we got grandiose and said, let's do a retreat, a 3-day event next year, yeah. And the rest is history. They just did their 11th one. I was not involved. And they did a lot of painful stuff, but they're all still clean, and it was successful, and people got, you know, people stayed clean for the weekend. That's the most important thing, really, you know. And our area is now 8 counties wide, over 40-some groups. We do have a helpline. We did get it off the ground. We have addicts answering phones with the helpline. We have H&I commitments, And I've been allowed to be part of that. I've been graced with the opportunity. And this is the real deal, too. Because this disease would like me to wallow in the wasted time and the shame and the guilt of my actions and my act of addiction. The high infidelity, the thefts, the abuse, emotional, physical, the trauma, you know, traumatizing my children, all that stuff. It would like me to wallow in that and just pack it in and get high. Being able to share all this, give a little hope, experience, and strength. I hate to use the word because it sounds religious, but it redeems me. It isn't worthless. It was all worth something now, all right? I got to tell you about the best meeting I do, and it's not my home group, even though I was always told if your home group isn't your best home group in the world, you need to change home groups. But it's the guys at the Bedford County Jail. They're the real deal. There's no lies in that room. There's no lies in that room. There's no errors. And it's special to me because... first of all, they're confined. They can't tell everything I just said at the meeting. No, I'm joking. No, they talk from the heart, man, and they got this desire. They got this hope to change. And we touch time and reality there. Bunch of grown men being intimate. It's cool. It's cool. Well, actually, we're a bunch of little kids, but it's the best meeting I do today. I look forward to it. Those guys saved my butt. And my home group is pretty cool, too. But I got to tell you, I got to share some things, too, because, and I don't mean to, like, run on, but I got to tell you, there's times, I want to tell you about keeping the old-timer connected. You know what I mean? I've been ostracized because I open my mouth sometimes and say uncomfortable stuff. And I say, geez, I sound like those guys that told me to shut the hell up and not say nothing. So I'm saying this for all of us, new and old. We got to stay connected. We got to remember to love one another. Because I can deliver some very... I heard somebody say this on a tape, and I keep forgetting about it. But honesty without compassion is brutality. And I forget that. Because I can get on my high horse and deliver something honest and say, I'll tear you down to build you back up. And this is how the steps and all the principles apply to what I'm saying. But I'm still being brutal. And I got to remember, that would have drove me out of the rooms when I first got here. After I hurt somebody. made a fool out of myself. And you know what? You know what? When I do that, when I act out and my character defects flare up and ego takes over, I hate myself afterwards. I'm embarrassed. I'm ashamed. You know, I just celebrated my 55th birthday on September 5th. And I'm lucky to have made it this far. And I'm grateful for that, too, because I thought I'd be dead before now. You know, there's not too many old junkies around. I can tell you that right now, man. You know that. But I'm embarrassed. I embarrass myself acting like that because in my heart, I love each and every one of you. I love everybody in my area. And I can't alienate myself, even from somebody I might, you know, might be taking their inventory. And I might miss what they say. You know, I might miss the message. It isn't the messenger here. You know, it isn't about personalities. Principles before personalities. I used to think that was my principles and your personality. Oh, you mean the principles of recovery and my personality. Actually, I get it now. But, geez, I've said some terrible stuff lately. But that's okay. Because there's about amends today, and I need to hug some people, and I need to go up to them and you know, share with them what's been going on with me. Because I'm a coward. You know, I find this out about myself. The closer you are to me, the easier I'll vent on you because it's safer, right? I might not get the retaliation if it was a stranger, you know. So I hurt the ones closest to me always, you know, and I'm still trying to work on that. I don't do it every day now like I used to, but, you know, it's still a journey. It's still a journey for me, and we need to learn from it. We need to pass this along. That's what was passed on to me, you know. That's what unifies us. I still think it's this disease trying to get at me. You know, because it's the little sneaky things that happen with me today, you know. Before I know it, I'll look around and nobody's going to be in my group because I've ostracized them, assassinated their character. And when I was getting clean in Pittsburgh, things you'd hear around the room was things like, you know, take your own inventory, motherfucker. You know, leave mine alone. And I forget that stuff. And I understood the principle behind that, you know. That's my step. That's you not working my fourth step. And people allowed me to come here and say some very sick stuff, and still loved me. I need to do the same thing. You know, I need to have some compassion in my honesty. And that's one of the things I'm trying to work on today. That's what those old times, that's what those guys, when I first came around, that's what was so attractive. They sound like great orators with a heart. And so it's probably, like always, some internal things going on with me that I'm not facing, some things that I'm not surrendering to and I'm trying to control. And because you're closest to me, I vent that way in a safe environment, but it's still not right. And that's probably the real deal. The things I feel that are going on in my life that I have no control over, and I'm just angry. Wasn't it always like that? You know, wasn't it always like that? You know, fear, anger, and resentments. Boy, I can carry on a three-way conversation really good, I tell you that. Me, myself, and I. What a committee. Talk about schizophrenia. Being restored to sanity, right? Being restored. So it still boils down to the same stuff. You know, the first three steps save my ass on a daily basis. And the rest is homework. You know, the rest is homework. Hopefully I get to carry a message that's been passed along, and hopefully somebody gets something out of it, you know. The therapeutic value. Therapeutic value. I think I'm done. So. I don't know what the hell I said. I hope to talk to a lot of you. I hope to get to know some new friends. I'll always remember Eric because when I threw my coffee cup to throw out the coffee, the handle broke and it went across the yard. Not 10 minutes old in my hand. And I'm keeping the broken coffee cup because I remember that moment. And a fellow from North Carolina and some similarities we were sharing. Just the beginning. And it's an honor to be part of this first retreat. It's an honor to be asked, and thank you. Good night.